one of the our origin story from the Bedewakantuma, the people of Spirit Lake, their origin story, one of the things that Mujimaka, Grandmother Earth, told them, by the way, it was a female god that produced humans. So she's kind of different from the Old Testament Genesis. Anyway, the storyteller says that that Ujimaka, when we're taught, when we pray, you know, we keep our eyes open, and because we didn't have churches, so we, and then we look up, and sometimes some of our people even raised their arms, because the storyteller, which I heard three times, he said that that's a universal sign of surrender, that you surrender completely to Tunkashira Wakantonka, grandfather, great mystery. And so, and then keep your eyes open. So like for me, since we didn't have these churches, when we prayed, we looked up at the sky, and that's what I'll be doing. I want, you know, be closing my eyes, and it's, again, it shouldn't be a competition that one way of praying is better than another. Our people don't think that. Our people, one of our ceremonies, teach us that to respect another person's vision. And so we have something we call the, my mind goes blank, but I'll remember it later. So I will offer a prayer here, a brief prayer, and I'll try to give a translation of it as well. We will pray. Oh, Tunkashira Wakantanka, Yo Tawash Aka Nakawa Ushida, Wanake, Ampetu Tokcha Wa, Gaya Ungaya Hibi, and for that, and Wopida Tanka, Unkeni Chiapi, Naku Ampetuki de Wayawash Beni Tawaki, which Honi, Wokoyanke, Woyute, Naku, Wotakuye, and for all these blessings, we, Tukashira Wakantanka, we offer our gratitude and we say thank you to you. And also tonight, all Duenina Kakisha Piki, or Ka Iota Iyakiapi. We ask that you look down upon them, have mercy upon them, and grant unto them, and wash akanitawaki and vichayakukte. Naku Tukashira Wakanka Tanka Dwe Nina Wayasakampiki. Naku Kudya Hitwa and Ushi Vichada Kazani Vichayakta. Kayatukinde Omnichia Uyuhapikte Taku Ukeapi, Taku Mukiukchampi, Nakutaku Echukupi, Hewas Tawashpe, Nakuda Wakamte, Vitoashpe Chiataha, Mushia, Chenpiapi. What I basically said was with Grandfather Great Mystery, that's our name for our God. Some people all say we worship the same God. No, we don't worship the same God. You know, the Old Testament God said, kill everything that hath breath, leave nothing alive that breatheth. And I don't know from our stories, our songs, our prayers, our teachings, our values, our God never said anything like that. Kill people, kill everything that hath breath, leave nothing alive that breatheth. Never, never had our God said anything like that. But yet, what white rich, and I think white Christians, when they go, their ministers haven't talked about their Yahweh Sabaoth. That means I go to a seminary, even. That's how lost I was. Anyway, what was I going to say about that? That they worship a military God. The translation is translation for Yahweh Sabaoth is one who musters armies. So it was a military god that white Christians worship. But of course, their ministers will tell them that. It's kind of like the priests when they started the Christianity. They would speak in Latin, preach in Latin, sing in Latin, and the peasants, of course, didn't understand any of that. So there's an aura of magic for them toward the priests. Anyway, I said that, and I said to him, thank you for bringing us safely to the end of another day. And we thank you for your many blessings, for food, for health. We thank you for our life. And we thank you for our people, our relatives and family. And we thank you. We remember tonight the sick, the ones who are undergoing hardship, and the ones who are grieving. And we ask prayer for them. And we thank you for your helping them. And so, and I just said, according to your goodness, I pray, Naku Taku Wadaki Unshia Waka. What I have asked for, I ask in humility. So that's what I said.
Thank you.
Yeah, so thanks, Chris. You know, it's important that we hear from our indigenous brothers and sisters. So much of what's happening in the world, of course, is because of us colonizers, you know. And colonizers in this country, colonizers in Gaza, you know, and I just ask that we just take another moment, just remember this day and every day for the last 7-8 months has been the innocent slaughter of children and women, especially in Gaza, that we take a moment and pause and think about that, you know, as our lives, you know, as the lives we live in this country and the kind of suffering that my country is inflicting around the world. We just be able to take a moment and pause for those people. Okay, so thanks again for coming out. I kind of just give a brief, I don't know exactly what I'm just going to come out of me tonight, but something, but I do have some footage that I want to show. I have some pictures I want to show. I'll talk a little bit. Most of you know me. I thought I'd just do kind of a little history of what, and then you're going to hear Mr. Buffalo now. You want to go up and say something? You want to come?
Sorry.
Chris, okay.
I already did it.
But anyhow, so I just want to talk for a little bit. I just kind of wanted to do a little bit of a history. People don't know me, and kind of what most people do know me, I should say that, but kind of what led me to where I am today in my life, where I'd be taking a trip off to attempt to go to Gaza, you know. I was a U.S. Army veteran. I went to war at 20 years old, and when I went to war, I went basically, I flunked out of college. I got thrown in the workhouse for disorderly conduct, and I lost my deferment, and I got drafted, and that's the trajectory that my life was on, back in that period of my life. And so anyhow, I went to Vietnam, and came back and pretty disillusioned, and really, you know, not really able to deal with my experience there. And it wasn't until I got, in 1978, I got into alcoholism recovery and started becoming awake. So my real awakening happened about 1970. I mean, basically all I knew about prior to that was drinking and partying and getting in trouble. I mean, that was the story of my life, or girls too, I was interested in women. But anyhow, that's the path I was on. And I went basically through a spiritual awakening in 1978. And from that, you know, as I became awake, I started dealing with the war business. I started becoming environmentally aware, you know, and I had to narrow my focus. So I picked war as my primary focus. That was like 1978. Basically was on my own with that. A solo veterans. I really didn't know about Vietnam veterans against the war. I didn't know about veterans of peace. Found these guys in 91, and I've been an active member of ever since 91, doing what we call with our national executive director that just kind of retired. We got a new executive director now, but what he calls putting out fires. I've been putting out fires, you know, at least since 1978. And again, and the fires continue to rage. and they rage and they rage, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse and worse. And you know what? I have a goal in my life. My primary goal that motivates me day to day is to leave the world a little better place. And I don't feel that. I don't feel like I've done that. The world has gotten worse and worse in my lifetime. You know, it's not rewarding work, anti-war work, and we just have not been. But anyhow, that's the focus of my life. And so anyhow, so I've been, over the years, of course, I've been aware of what's happening in Israel and Palestine, and a horrible mistreatment, especially of the children. You know, it just drives me crazy. And it, to me, it's always been kind of like David and Goliath. You know, that they throw a rock and they get, you know, rockets and mortars, and just, it's just so unbelievable, just children. And I've been watching that for years. And I've known about the flotillas. I've known Anne Wright. I've known Anne Wright. I know her. She joined Veterans for Peace. I've known about the flotillas, but it's not ever been like my thing, you know. I've been interested in, but it's never something that I really thought personally about doing. But then as October 7th happened, you know, I just knowing what had happened, just for the simple acts, the Palestinians, how they're always, I just knew as soon as that happened, that just like 9/11, when 9/11 hit, I knew we're in trouble. You know, here goes our freedoms, you know, we're screwed. And same thing with Palestine. When October 7th happened, I knew that it was going to be bad. I mean, I knew this is going to get really, really bad for the Palestinian people. And from that day, from October 7th forward, you know, as they started dropping bombs, and I put my life on hold. And I said, I just had this sense of urgency. I just, you know, this has got to stop. This can't happen. You know, and we've been pounding away, you know, trying to stop the madness, and it continues. I mean, now we're into Iraq. It's just get worse and worse and worse. It just pulls on my heart. I can't even tell you. You know, it just, but my, that's all I've done for the last 6 months, 7 months is do what I can do to stop the madness, you know. And Colleen and I have been a team. There's a group of us that have gotten together and done a bunch of different things. And anyhow, so about on March 29th, there was a gal coming to town, Awadi, I thought I'm going to put my cheat sheet up now. Her names, I'm not good with the names, but Awadi was coming. Awadi?
I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, but anyhow, so she was scheduled to come to town March 29th. She was scheduled to come to town at the University of Minnesota Wiley Hall, and I put her on my calendar, and I was going to go check. I didn't know what she was going to talk about. I thought she's kind of cute. Maybe I'll go watch her, listen to her, see what she has to say. No, and you get that. Okay, but anyhow, so nonetheless, but at the same time, we do the weekly vigil, and Sarah had asked if somebody could come talk at the Friday vigil, and you know, so I said sure, somebody should come, so I'll go do that. So I thought I was not going to be able to see this woman, and so, but as it turns out, somewhat synchronicity, she was speaking here that evening, so I got to come and hear Hawade speak. You know, I never did pronounce it in front of her either. But anyhow, and there's a lot of those names that, you know, a lot of people that we met that I can't tell you, you know. But anyhow, so I came and she talked about the flotilla. And I said, wow, that sounds like a good thing. Because what do we do next? You know, what do I do next? It really just kind of fit right into my program. What do I do next? And so she had a thing of paper that she handed out with a QR code where she wanted people to sign up for it. So I signed up, got approved. And then I started researching. I started, what am I going to get myself into? You know, I didn't really know. But I got a hold of Anne Wright, and I called. She, in fact, called me and told me that I was okay for the trip. And by the way, I've done multitude of these. I went back to Vietnam in 91 to do repair work. We built a medical clinic. I've been to Iraq. We went to Iraq for the water treatment plant. We're still doing that in 2000. I've been to Cuba on mission. I've been to Chiapas Brian Wilson. I've been with a delegation with Brian Wilson. Been to Cuba. The last trip that I did was to Jeju, South Korea, Jeju Island, where they're building a Navy base in Jeju. And on the return of that trip, I had a pulmonary embolism. And I said, I had from blood clotting that happens when you don't get up and exercise. And so that was kind of, I thought that was kind of the end of the line for me, those kind of trips. And so, but anyhow, but this came up, And I said, well, this sounds worthwhile. But, you know, so I talked to Ann, right, about it. She was on that Jeju trip, by the way. And she started telling me about it. She didn't hold back. She just said, you know, possibly, you know, worst case scenario is they'll kill us, you know. I mean, it's certainly, you know, I mean, it's very entirely possible because they're crazier now than they were in 2010. You know, and I'm going to show you excerpts of 2010 on the thing tonight. But they're crazier now. And this is what Colleen would tell me that over and over. Well, you know, Barry, they're crazy, I know it. But anyhow, but I didn't seriously consider that, but I did. The thing that scared me, I wasn't really scared about, and I still am not, about getting shot at. You know, I don't want to get hit, but I want to get hit. I'd have been hiding behind the can and the boat there, but anyhow, the thing that really freaks me out is, as an alcoholic, you know, I used to get arrested periodically, and being in jail never really bothered me. I mean, I was enslaved, you know, I wasn't a bad deal. But now it is, and I have a phobia. I have a phobia. I have claustrophobia. I've always had it since I was a kid, but it's gotten worse. I don't like flying on airplanes. You know, I don't like being in elevators. You know, and the thought, and Ann talked about the fact that what most likely happened is they capture the boat. They take us in three days in prison in Israel, and taking away all of our communication. Said, just bring whatever you don't care about, because they're going to take it all, including maybe your medicine and stuff, and your no communication. So that thought of 3 days in a jail and freaked me out. And I come and go. So I started waffling that first week before I really committed. After finding the paper, I waffle. You know, people know. Mike, you know, most of you know how I waffle. You know, it was a big deal. And then, but finally, kind of what helped push it over. First of all, I we talk about heroes, and when I got to see the list of other people, other U.S. people that were going to be a part of the delegation, this helped me. Colleen was on there, and Medea Benjamin, and Ann Wright, and one of my real heroes, Matt Ho from our group, was on there. So I said, if they're going, I'm going. You know, but then I get into another, then I start waffling about something else, you know. But then what another thing that really helped push me over, because I thought we'd be on the boat with the aid. I thought we'd be on the, and I said, well, you know, they're going to, I question it. You know, they're going to have question it for weapons or whatever being on there. But we had a 2-hour, during the UNAC conference, I had a 2-hour conversation with all the people from the United States. And Ann assured us that it was not going to be a suicide mission. That felt pretty good. That we weren't going to be on the boat with the aid, separate, totally separate boat. But then we got two other boats with passengers on them. And so that helped, just to know that I wasn't have to be on the aid boat. And so then, you know, play whatever scenario you want. But the worst part about the whole thing is not knowing. You don't know what the hell's going to happen, you know. And I got there, and, you know, so I had phobia getting there. And then my first night in the hotel room, I'm freaking out. Get me out of this place. The further I wait, get away from home, get me out of here. And then, I was ready to go. We got there to train on the 18th, and we're supposed to leave the 21st. And I was going to go. We had our nonviolent training, a couple of days of that, and it was very, very realistic, you know, because it was there. What they were assuming, probably the minimum, is that they get on the boat and, you know, hassle us and then arrest us all. So that's what we trained for. And it was, you know, these guys really did a job on us, you know, with the noise and thunder, and we got it. We had our little affinity groups that we broke into. You had to select a group, an affinity group, for when you get on the boat, who you're going to be your buddies. I picked this group of my partner's daughter dates a guy from Malaysia, and there was a group, a really, really beautiful group of Malaysian men and women, you know, that have been part of this. The fact that one of the older guy in the group, his wife was on it earlier. But anyhow, so I picked this international group of, it was like four Malaysians and me, another veteran for peace, and myself. And this was our affinity group. And I just am going into the wrong path. But anyhow, so we had to pick these groups. And then in this practice session, we would decide how we're going to react when they'd come on and they're hitting us and shoving us and stuff like that. And we just decided early on that we're going to just like hold hands, you know, and support each other, show these soldiers that we're not we're not afraid of you, but we're, you know, and we want to stay together as a unit. And so, but as they tried to separate us, we just kind of spontaneously grabbed a hold of each other, you know, and held on and resisted. And then after that went through, then we kind of had a question and go, okay, so how did your group affinity group do, you know? And then the whole question is, it better to just be there passive, or is it better to resist? You know, well, and, you know, if you're going to block an intersection, you want to be together. But in this case, they're going to get you anyhow. And they're going to arrest you anyhow. It's, but you know, and the more you piss them off, the more they're going to, you know, be harsh on you. So that was a lesson that I learned. I didn't really know that. You know, I'm not a big arrestee kind of a person. I kind of avoid that. But I did, you know, another thing at October 7th happened. I said, you know, I was ready to do whatever is necessary, but I said, I'm willing to get arrested, but it's going to be for the right thing. So this was the right thing for me. I was ready to be arrested at this thing. And so we learned some learning, but I just want to say out of this group, this most wonderful group of men, you know, they're just beautiful. And their whole, the group, the Malaysian people. So anyhow, so that was the training. And then in the 3 days, we got to know each other. The best part about the whole trip, of course, is the people. You know, we had people kept dropping off. You know, I heard when I left here, they were predicting like 1,000 people going to be on this boat. You know, and when it actually came down, push to shove, you know, we had like 40 minutes, soldiers, I think, or you know, else, they got down to 35. We had like 150, you know, people just from, you know, from around the world, but it was like 40 countries represented, multiple languages. And there's really, really people that have been on the boat before, but just good. I want to show some pictures. I don't want to do a lot of it. But anyhow, that the best part for me was the people, you know. So I have my inner anguish at night, you know, not sleeping and just ruminating about what the hell's going to happen, you know. So that the third 24th came, we didn't go. I said, oh shit, you know. And then we, you know, and she wait, okay, so 2 days, and they were screwing around with us from the beginning. You know, the United States government and Germany were there working on Turkey to not let us go. My U.S. government did not want a U.S. citizen to get on that boat and deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza. My government did not want it. And so we didn't know up until the time. So anyhow, so they were, but they were screwing around with us. We had to take the boat to this dock. Or put the, you know, 2 days, put the boat to the boat here. And we knew that delay is a tactic. And as you prolong things, then people are going to drop off. And that's exactly what happened. Yes, you know, Medea left like after the second day, you know. And so, anyhow, so I went through that. And then 2 more days, I'm getting, you know, and then a little more frustrated. 2 more days. And you're starting to wonder, is this thing going to leave? You know, is this thing going to leave or not? How many more days am I going to hang in here with this thing and drive myself crazy or go home, you know? So the 2 days before we were to leave, I went to Ann and I said, you know, I was pretty seriously waffling. Other people were leaving and asking the same question. And I went to Ann and I said, because they talked about getting us out of the hotels and onto the boat. But they say, once you're on the boat, you're not getting off. So I had visions that we get on that boat and we have to sit in the harbor for 4 days and not go anywhere. I didn't want that. I didn't want to just sit down. If I'm going to get on that boat, we're gone. And so I asked Ann that the morning that we heard from Gideon Boussel. I said, Ann, so what's the story? She says, Barry, if we actually go to the boat and customs is there and lets us through, we're gone. She says, if the customs isn't there, that means Turkey doesn't want us to go. So that was that morning. And then that Friday, that evening was when the announcement came that Guinea-Bissau had pulled the flags on the boat, which Israel had. They had just, if you Google Guinea-Bissau visits Israel, in the early part of March, they visited, the, you know, basically buddy-buddy with Israel. And they came away how good buddies they were. So Israel pressured Guinea-Bissau. You have to, in order to sail the ocean, you have to have flags. They have to be And I can't tell you the reason exactly for it. You're supposed to have country flags in order to legally sail. And so they pulled the flags and then they made a bunch of unrealistic requirements. And so basically that stopped us in our track. So that night that our leaders said that, listen, this is what, you know, it's a minor snafu, but we think it's better for you guys to go ahead and go home.
and then come back when we got that stuff in order. So it's not stuck. You know, it'll go again, but there's still no guarantees that they're going to get out of harbor. And the knowing too that if they ever do get out of harbor, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, kind of, you know, my vision was that they block us somehow, but I really didn't. Even though I redid my will, you know, and I had my family didn't want me to go. I mean, you know, my daughter-in-law says, you know, I don't want to have to tell them babies that you're not coming back. You know, and I mean, it was serious. I mean, it was the serious stuff. I did my will and all that. And my sister, I didn't want to tell her because she totally freaked out, you know. But anyhow, so what was good about it is that my telephone reception was so good out there that I had a number of group people that I keep both. I sent pictures and try to keep people abreast of what was happening. But that really helped my partner Denise, especially getting pictures, just like I'm touring Istanbul, you know. And in Istanbul is really, I mean, it wasn't like it was torture necessarily being, it was torture at night, but not. And we kept busy, and it's really a pretty remarkable 23 million people, and that's not counting tourists, where there's probably another 23 million tourists coming in there. But it's just a really, it's really an A place. And we were in the very holy, holy part of the old part of Istanbul. I'll try to show a couple pictures. But yeah, I know people are anxious about me taking too much time here. But the so that part's done, and just like when I was in the service, you know. People, the question that I get is, are you going back? Or did you get on vote? You know, it's like when I got back from the service, people, well, did you see Hobbit? Or did you shoot somebody? That's what people want to know. So I feel like somewhat of a failure because I'm not going back and I won't be getting on that vote. It's not likely. So I feel maybe it's incomplete, but we did the best that we could. And you know, we raised awareness all around the world. We had all kinds of media. I felt really good about the Washington Post article in particular, and Mary doing all kinds of stuff, keeping us active on. So I felt really good about the fact, just the purpose of it, of course, was to get the aid to Gaza, but it was also to call attention to the 17-year siege that Israel has had on Gaza. This has been going on for years, and it's totally illegal. They have no business doing it. And they act with impunity. They shot this USS what called Liberty Cole, 1967.
Liberty.
Oh, yeah.
USS Liberty.
Yeah, get a phone call on that. That's a good thing. But anyhow, so it's just totally outrageous what they try to do. And I won't go on and on about it. I want to show you just a few minutes of what they came on the 2010 on the Mavi Marmara. Bobby and Mamar.
Whatever.
So you do that, or I do my pictures. My breeze through my pictures first, or maybe show that.
What do you want to do?
Would you rather see the footage first, or would you rather see my picture? Maybe the footage first, and then I'll share it up with my picture.
Pictures.
I think we have to get the light back there. Some.
Now, why don't you just turn the lights off and light runs by the screen?
So this is some actual footage of the Bibi Mamara. And they showed us this in our training. Yeah, I took hundreds of pictures, and they asked me a pack for us to try to reduce them down to a manageable number. So we're just breathing through them. Go ahead. You know, everywhere we'd go, we had a standoff demonstration with 20,000 people having a vigil behind us. And then we, after the trip was called out, we had two more vigils. One over on the eight, you know, this is where the East divides the West, Asia, Europe, you know, that's what Istanbul is all about. So anyhow, but everywhere we would go, just tremendous support. This is my affinity group. These are and there was one other guy from Scott from Vietnam or Iraq vet from Hawaii. Go ahead.
Leave it alone. No.
Okay, go ahead. Come on.
Okay.
This is a Hawaii. Here's Anne.
Hawaii.
Sorry, Hawaii. And this guy here,
what's his name coming?
It's Ishma. This guy here, IHH is the organization that put this all together. They do worldwide humanitarian aid work. They spend millions and millions. They bought all the boats, they bought the aid. And this guy is a big part of that. He would be our nightly liaison with that group. And his father was killed on the 2010.
And this, I got this one because of the mixture of the flags. That's Colleen. That was Colleen right there. This was the therapist. And here's all the women. All right, this is a lot of the Malaysian women. Just beautiful people. Just really great. And she was on Avi Marara too in Mamarma. And it was one of my favorite shots right there. And she actually was part of the Malaysia group, and she lives in Wales. And then so here we would have nightly meetings.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and always and hardcore dedicated. And we would, it was in multiple languages, so we'd have to every night have people do interpreters, it wasn't all US. And just, I just these are my favorite kind of pictures. This is the kind of picture that I take. So and this is just the second time that the trip was canceled. We always said, what do we do? What do we do? And I put out an action call to Veterans for Peace National to send into our membership a call to action to call your legislators and tell them to let that go and grant us safe passage. I went to I went to all of them before I left. I had a letter there. I said, I want you to do your power to make this vote go and get it through safely. That's within your power to do that. That building there we went to the U.S. consulate in Istanbul to work with this, to talk to somebody from the State Department there. And this is a brand new multi-million dollar building. Okay, it goes into the hill and up here, a big building up here. Now we've got how many homeless encampments around this country? And this is just the U.S. consulate, and there's security and cops and people working, just the consulate. And in Iraq, I guess they have one as large like a baseball field, and the embassy in Iraq. So this is how our tax dollars go. This was really the highlight of the trip for me. This is Nelson Mandela's grandson, and we call him Chief. Yeah, it's just a beautiful man. And when he first came in, everybody freaked out. They wanted to run up and get a picture. And he, how we are. And he said, listen, you guys, I'm here for you. I'm staying as long as you need to get, as long as it need be, so you get your picture, get whatever you want. So this is the U.S., most of the U.S. delegation and him there. Okay. And this is, just another group. This is Ty Berry, and here's Colleen, and he's Medea Benjamin's cohort. They're in conspiracy together. And here's Medea, and this is my roommate, and this guy stayed up there too. And this is a group from Spain, just another really great group from Spain. Okay. This is a Palestinian gal. She came and read us a poem, and she was selling real Palestinian, kafiyas. Just a really sweet gal. These were Russians. Here's two Russians, guys. We had, unbelievable to me that people, 40 different countries,
42.
Excuse me. 42. here's probably not. This is our training. Istanbul has got to be the center for the weddings in the world. I mean, we're talking hundreds of buildings, three-story buildings with wedding dresses. I say, what are they doing with weddings? But anyhow, this is where they have a wedding. And so Colleen and I, this is in our first training day. Colleen and I did do it. We had our first day of touring raining, and we managed to get lost. And we got really, really lost. But anyhow, so the touring buddies too. I was so glad to have her there, I'll tell you right. We don't have to go to them all. Just go a few more. I wanted to see the moment with me and shaking my hand with the Mandela grandson. I didn't know it was being taken. I always was sitting in the front row. I had to be ready for the action. And I got to shake his hand, and a guy behind me took the picture, of me shaking his hand. So that's kind of, I like that. Okay, maybe we should just go into the.
Yeah.
Video.
All right. Okay, so it's up starting at about minute 12. Hopefully the audio works. We've had problems with the speakers.
There are captions.
Yeah, but still. Lenny and I have been trying to carry this here. I don't know
Sorry about this. Yeah, audio though is a lot very powerful.
International law. We are the people. Humanity.
Yeah, it's all
started over.
This is the thing then.
Action to stop Israel from violating international law, and you want to get through in peace, Father, and stop everything else. Stop hunting the sunlight, let the world know what they're going to do.
We don't want to face this burden in Jacksonville, but the prison of every attacker is there. So if you do have to face them, if you do want to be able to control the world, India will be very important at this point.
Yeah, so they're just starting to cite both. Post coming in, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're starting to.
One is behind the laptop, and there are three coming this way, and one farther away. Okay. Porque podría ocasionar víctimas mortales, es algo que no queremos, mortalizar, y el pánico que podría surgir en el transporte de personas que aquí en Antuna, hasta que un ejército podría ser fatal. Hemos hecho un llamamiento por las redes sociales.
Yeah, well, they're monkeying around with their sound. They're trying to break the sound. They know that they're being approached. It'll become more obvious.
Se pueden seguir por internet y creemos que es necesario que la comunidad internacional hoy no duerma, esté con nosotros apoyándonos y en el mejor de los casos diciendo a sus políticos que tienen que actuar ya, ahora.
I just want to say that as you know, there's quite a bit of chaos on this, and our training was going to be completely much more organized than this boat was. They probably didn't do a whole lot of it. This is only like the second year into it. They started going in 2008. This was 2010. And they had a lot of people. We had like,
what happens all the time in the past, and they throw something in there to get, you know.
Our trip was much more focused on being a passive resistant.
So the helicopters are now starting to hover up above. And this is where the real damage, they're already shooting people on the upper level of the boat there.
You mean from the water they're shooting?
Oh, there's a helicopter up above. And they, you know, you see the guy down below with a slingshot, taking a shot at him. But they did, you know, they managed to get some bugs and stuff like that. They're trying to save their boat. They had a responsibility to save their boat. You know, I mean, it'd be really hard to do this and not try to do something when you got people coming home and shooting at you and stuff like that.
Barry, all the killing from helicopters?
They came from the top. Most of the gun wounds were through the top of their head. They were shot from the top. You know, they eventually came, see here, but they're shooting a slingshot like that, gonna do any good. But they did, you know, and then they did capture some of the Israeli soldiers, and they were very kind to them, and they released them, and then they turn around and were animals to them after.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can see they had a manifesto. Maybe it'll show that they had people that they had been targeting. We see the
We were considered to be terrorists, you know, IHH, the humanitarians, all terrorists. And the people that came to visit Turkey were the terrorists, State Department terrorists. And so they had a book of people that are supposedly terrorists, who they were aiming for.
Were those injured people, were they dead?
No.
It says injured, were they dead?
Yeah, there were. Ended up being 10 dead and 40 injured.
Yeah.
What
boat
are you talking about?
The Mavi Marmara.
Mavi Marmara. And they did, you know, Anne Wright was on a boat enjoying this, and they did confront those other boats too. It felt like they didn't do anything to those boats. So yeah, I just wanted to give you an idea of what kind of what came down there.
Was that an injured?
Done. Is that it?
No, she's on a different boat.
Yeah, I think that's probably enough.
All right.
You know, if anybody wants to show it, I'll show it again. We can show it, see the whole thing.
It's available on YouTube though, right?
Yeah, available. Yeah, you can rent it. There's a trailer for nothing. You can rent it for $4. Anyhow, so I just want to say a couple more things, and then Colleen can come and have her 45 minutes, and then so 150 people, but I just wanted to say that there was going to be another 300 Turks, 12,000 Turks applied to be on this ship, and I think like 4 million contributed to the aid, 4 million Turks, and you know, Turkey has cut aid to Israel. And they cut trade, I should say, with Israel. So we had, but we wanted to have an international group, so we didn't want it just to be Turks. But if we'd have gotten on that boat, there'd have been at least 300 Turks along with our 150. So it'd have been like 450, plus the media. And the way they did this thing, we were not even going to be able to be on the deck of the ship. They're going to come on. We're going to be down below in our affinity groups. And then, you know, probably passive resistance, you know, let them arrest us and do what they're, but that was the scenario that we were preparing for. So these guys was told, okay, once it's already coming down, you know, I mean, you have a response, you want to retext, you know, I'd have been hiding behind the tin can over in the corner, but people that are not, I learned a long time ago that I'm not tough, you know, and the best thing for me to do in lieu of getting beat up is to get down in the fetal position. And I learned that a long time ago. You know, I mean, if you're tough, you think you can take them on, go ahead. But you know, more power to it. But that, you know, that's not for me. So yeah, okay. Colleen?
Yep. All right. Oh, yeah. After listening to Barry, I can still recruit you to volunteer for the next flotilla. You know, if you saw the back of our shirts, this is all of the fifth. Yeah, good. There's 15 of these, and people say, well, you know, it didn't succeed. I said, well, you know what? They have a long history of trying. And the 2010 one was bad. Ishmael's father was killed in this. And now, you know what? It has generated in Turkey just this unbelievable, you know, compared to here, because we left before the college resistance had come up. And so one of the reasons I volunteered was, you know, trying to do all the signs and the banners on the footbridges and the vigils and all the things that we've done. It's just, you know, okay, this is an opportunity to do more. And yes, it's risky. But, you know, the main reason, of course, is what the sign at the vigil tonight, that the lady, I don't even know her, but her sign said, what if your kids were under the rubble? And I saw that and go, oh, that's what I've got to make a new one. What if your kids were under the rubble? It's the main reason I volunteered. And I will say I have two or three other reasons. One is I studied international law before I joined the FBI. And, you know, it's not just international law. It's actually now our domestic law. There's laws that forbid us from arming and aiding a genocide and from funding a country that has nuclear weapons. There's a law. You would never know it, you know, never hear about it on the news. But those are domestic laws. And, of course, now we are going into a situation where it's now going to be illegal. It's already passed the House to criticize Israel. So we've lost with freedom of press, you know, with WikiLeaks, now freedom of speech. I mean, literally everything is going into a state of chaos, a lawless state, even here. Like what we used to think of as other countries are like that, but here we have laws. So that was another reason. And then, you know, if the genocide could not be stopped, it's leading, it's on the very verge of starting a larger regional war. Israel got so emboldened by the genocide, very easy to kill these people that are trapped, you know, that can't leave and they have a blockade, a siege for 17 years, and you can just bomb them periodically and now actually go into full genocide. That's real easy. So why don't we just go bomb the consulate in Syria as well? And when Iran did that, you know what? That's the trigger for a regional war. And as soon as if Iran had actually retaliated, now we could be looking at world war because Russia and China will come in on the side of Iran. And, you know, I don't know if people quite understand this, but world war means nuclear war. And there are actually plans in the Pentagon now to use tactical nukes. There's drills to use tactical nukes. If people are unwilling to risk, you know, the risk that we were taking to go on the next flotilla. But also, for instance, that State Department spoke. There's been three State Department people that have resigned. And the last one was a Foreign Service officer. If you haven't watched it on Democracy Now!, it's really good. That lady is completely articulate. And what she explains is that this actually now is not at all in the United States' interest. If people think we're merely killing people far away in Gazans, you know, it's a lot easier to tolerate that. But if you know that this blowback is now on us, and anyways, watch Democracy Now! And what she said is, you know, there's a lot of other State Department people and other government insiders. We know there are staffers, some of the people we call up from time to time. I know Barry even got somebody that said, yeah, I agree with you. One of the staffers even said, was it Klobuchar's staffer? Even said, good luck on getting humanitarian aid. Of course, you know, there's a mixture. Maybe they're just saying things to appease you. But also, some of them actually are against their own bosses. Now, what her name was Hala Rarit. What Hala said is they can't quit. They won't risk their jobs like I did. And so the thing is, if you understand the consequences and what's at stake right now, we all have to step up and actually risk some more consequences because it is really serious now. We are really looking far, far more. And this is not me talking. This is our veteran intelligence professionals for sanity. It's at least three or four groups I'm in. Stephen Starr and all that group that David Cooley sends out. These are the experts. And the experts right now are saying, we're looking at nuclear war. If this cannot be turned around, because it's not just Israel that's berserk and committing genocide, killing children, et cetera. They're up to their eyeballs now in this, but it's also the United States backing it. I saw Aaron Mates right before I came today. And I sent him that photo. It was the photo that said Genocide Joe, and there's an American flag on it. And he was on the group, and I sent it to him, and he said, where'd that come from, Colleen? And I go, well, I'm not sure, but I think it's somewhere in Washington, D.C. And somehow he found it and got the... Anyway, Aaron Mate's article, and it's very correct. People who think that this, Biden's saying, I'm not going to give any more weapons. Well, of course, he's saying that so that he thinks he has a chance in the election if he can tell people now that he's no longer sending bombs to Israel. Not true at all. Not true. He's already sent plenty to have already done this damage. And so it's another one of these, oh, we'll drop parachutes with crates in. We'll build a pier. Yeah. I mean, these are the most ridiculous things in the world. And so it's fooling people, and it's up to us, I think, and of course, a lot of good writers and stuff that are in alternative news to try to tell people. So I'm going to give you the little video. I was real impressed with this guy. His name's Mohammed Dillon, and he did a short video. It's a good summary. He is an Iraqi. Okay, so here's an Iraqi. One of the victims, he was a little kid when it started. Can't hear him.
But you can you send that to me by email so I can look
for
at
Instagram,
it?
You yeah, can take it sound
for a song.
Colleen, can you just read what you say?
Yeah.
We can't get back here.
Yeah, let me start over.
Okay. We left our lives.
Let me start over.
Okay, before we start, he's an Iraqi. His background is he was actually helping do medical work behind the front lines in Iraq, with and bringing little kids to the back of it and help, you know, doing some medical help for kids. We have more than 5,500 tons of food and medicine. We left our life, our families, our work, and more than 1,000 people from more than 30 countries. It turns out to be 42 countries in the world. We are here preparing to sail to Gaza. That was one of the marches that we did. Also, I have Wassel Tassel humanitarian work. We do work inside Gaza district since October 7th. He's running, we did distributing food and medicine and non-portable water through Gaza, Rafah, and volunteering team in North Gaza. And more than 250,000 people, beneficiaries from our work in Gaza last 6 months. But that's not enough. We need to provide more food and medicine. And I hope if I can meet our great team in Gaza, our message for people watching my video, to share our journey on social media, to help us to do more for Gaza, and we hope go in safe journey and come back to our families. So 20-some year old Iraqi who has already been working in Iraq, and I think it was up in the north where we had the war on ISIS, where he was trying to do some medical work. He's running out like a soup kitchen in Gaza with 35 people and feeding thousands of people. And he's 20 some years old. And he was one of the flotilla participants. So there were some real impressive people that were part of this. And a lot of them were young.
I have those pictures you sent me.
Okay, so we can put a picture up. Oh, no. Okay, well, I was lucky because after...
That's the wrong one. There we go.
This is actually the new ship. So if you volunteer, you fill out this application that's on the International Freedom Flotilla page. You press apply and fill it out. And this boat is bigger than the Mavi Marmara. Quite a bit bigger. It's at least 7 levels, and it's going to hold a lot more people. And Barry had already left. He didn't get to see it, but we all got to have a little tour on the boat. And this is one of the hallways below. I think it's a thing down below. Okay, next one. That's like, you know, on a cruise ship when you first come in, you know. Yeah. So it's actually an old cruise ship that's been kind of, it's old, but it's been, it's ready to go. So this is at, we made these banners, of course, and lucky we did because we had all these vigils and marches and things. And our one said sail for Gaza. And there are a lot of the women of the IHH. Which I can't pronounce it either, the IHH, what it actually is in Turkish. But this group was extremely impressive. I didn't know much about who was behind the flotilla. And again, the Washington Post said Israel labels them a terrorist entity. Well, they're like the Red Cross, you know. But of course, Israel labels IRA a terrorist entity. So, I mean, they're like, they've done 100 missions all over the world, earthquakes and everything else. But whenever this was all the women of the IHH had a vigil every day, and we would sit there and all of them were so thankful that there were international people that were trying to help. And they all different backgrounds as well in the IHH. All right. This is a big square.
That was the last picture.
That's the last one?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I didn't have as many photos.
We can show the 1 minute video on Free Free Palestine.
Oh, yeah, that's on the front of the new shed.
There's no audio, so it's only 10 seconds.
No.
You can sort of mouth the words here. Here we go.
Audio's off.
There's no audio. That's it, Mel, in the middle.
No.
Hold on. That's it. That's the front of the boat. There's actually even a place for a helicopter to land on the front of the boat. So this time they don't have to rappel down. They can actually land on the boat. She's military. Actually, I think she's reserved. And actually, some of them have stayed there. They didn't come back. And some people are planning to come back, fly back, even as far as New Zealand. They're going to fly back. There were three doctors that came all the way from New Zealand, Australians. And so a lot of us are planning to go back, depending on what happens. But trying to think. I think that's it, unless there's a question.
Oh, I have a question.
Yeah.
Were there any Israelis?
That's a good there were Jewish voices for peace.
Yeah.
But I do not believe there were any Israelis in the group.
Curious.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. There were about 35 Americans. And I would say the biggest group was Malaysians, Indonesians.
Spain.
Spanish were the big group.
Some of the 35 were Jewish.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Medea Benjamin.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And there were others too.
Right.
Yep.
I thought maybe we'd hold the questions till the end, get all our talks done, and then come back and do questions because we have one more speaker.
We were allowed.
We have one more speaker. But yeah,
we have one more speaker.
Let Jeff get his.
Okay. How about Jeff, the hunger striker?
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, it's great to be here tonight. I have to say, I want to be someplace where I can look at the screen and read stuff there and not be in the way of the camera. It's maybe off to this side.
Over here, maybe this
one.
Okay, and
if
you cut that light, that would be
great. And you can roll it.
Slide one. Okay, go ahead. Yes, that's a good idea.
Let's see. Then you need to hit your space bar or something to get the video to play. I'm not sure we are, or click play.
Okay, there it goes.
Tell us what's happening here.
Okay, this is just scenes from the White House. Typically, what I've been to Washington a bunch of times for demonstrations. Usually, I come in on a bus, I demonstrate, I get back on the bus, and I go back home. This time, I was there for more than 2 weeks, and we were living in Northeast D.C. and going crosstown on the bus to the shrine, as I'm calling it. And I just wanted to capture some of the scene that's going on in front of the White House on a daily basis there.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a spectacle.
Really?
It's amazing. Wow. There's a peace camp there. Thousands of people come from all over the world to visit this holy place. And there are demonstrations. Just for demonstration of people coming from Honduras who have been injured in La Bastilla. And people are coming, there are some of us who are fasting. And that was a sign on the bus going across, Afro-American plight, no different from Palestinians.
Yeah.
On the public bus, right? So, but in addition to all the stuff that I just showed you, there's all kinds of other things. Like there's somebody with a sound system there, and he plays every national anthem in the world, one after the other. Now, here's the national anthem of Afghanistan. And then he plays Happy Birthday a couple of times an hour. You know, somebody's having a birthday. And so it's just this amazing spectacle.
Video's done.
Yeah. Yes, we can move on.
Move on.
I know.
Okay, next slide.
Okay. So this whole thing was sparked by Aaron Bushnell,
yeah,
who immolated himself, of course, in front of the Israeli embassy. You've read this quote before. Many of us like to ask ourselves, what would I do if I was alive during slavery or the Jim Crow South or apartheid? What would I do if my country was committing genocide? The answer is, you're doing it right now.
Yeah.
So
you can hear pushed down.
Yes. So that shook up a lot of people. And many of us heard him, his remarks, and were motivated, including another airman, Larry Hebert, who took a leave from his duty station in Spain and started fasting in front of the White House. Many of us, and maybe you, saw his interview on Democracy Now. And when I saw it, I thought, wow. And then I thought, hey, wait, I'm a veteran. I can do that. So I figured out how to get to DC. There were other people, Marshall Burns. He just jumped on Amtrak and showed up in time to catch Larry while he was still there. Najim Malik was a guy who lives in Washington, D.C. Josie Gugu was a former Army intelligence officer who resigned as a consequence of stuff she was seeing come across her desk as her job. And she rented a B&B for all of us to stay at. We were carrying on activities around genocide. Al Gladkowski, he would move on. And then finally, there was another guy at the end. So I want to talk about a couple of things. Why it was effective. You can take the next slide. And then basic lessons. Okay, so the White House is the setting of this fast. It is the national shrine. It's the center of the executive branch of the federal government. It has a historic role in our nation's story. All of anybody who goes there, they're aware of the fact of the role it plays in our national culture. Active duty soldiers and veterans are also iconic, valorized figures in this national story. And yet, here we are charging the president, the leader of our government, with supporting genocide. And we're leveling this charge by fasting, a nonviolent action. Next. Okay, so this setting, it sets up a tremendous dramatic tension. So people come to this site expecting some kind of celebratory visit to a national shrine, I call it. But instead, they're confronted with this controversy. There's just this conflict going on within the national story. People react to it in different ways. So it's useful to consider where people sit on something called the spectrum of allies. You may have seen this before. Next slide, please. So here's the basic idea. And you can use this to understand where people sit on basically any question. So this is us down here. Here are the people closely associated with us. They like what we're doing. Maybe they're already doing it. There are passive allies, the people in the middle. There's the passive opposition, and then there's the active opposition. So they all respond to us in different ways. And we could see that in terms of who was coming up and talking to us. Next slide, please. And so overwhelmingly, the basic response we got was thankfulness from people who were happy to see us there. This was a very emotional moment for many because they were feeling isolated and they didn't know what to do. And to see us there and to see us carrying on this fast was something that they had been looking for and longing for. So that was good. We'll get back to that in a minute. The people at the other end of that spectrum, the people who are actively opposed to us, this diagram doesn't show much movement out of that stage, out of that people who hold those views. But in fact, I think there was something going on because we had several people from Israel who were there. There was one, a young woman, and she tried very simply to explain why we were wrong. And when we didn't immediately agree with her, she was reduced just to shouting insults at us. I mean, it totally destroyed. She didn't know how to respond to us. She didn't have a framework for understanding what we were doing. There was another guy, also from Israel. When we brought up the deaths of civilians and children, he said, oh, there are no children dying in Gaza. Come to Israel, I can prove to you. So whatever, I think we presented them with something which fractured their certainty. And it's a possible sign that something more positive can happen. So next slide, please. So I guess the first thing is, these are the conclusions I draw. There's a broad sense of outrage at the genocide being committed by the U.S. and Israel in Palestine. The managers of U.S. empire have lost control of the narrative. And we can see that from the uprisings in the colonies all over. And of course, this is a global awakening. It's not just here in the United States. It's all over the world. This is why I think focusing on Gaza and Palestine is key to our work in building this movement at this time. It splits. I think it gives us a tremendous leverage to do things that we have never been able to do before. We just have to get on the ball and make the most of this that we can. So the spontaneous movement, the things that are happening on the campus, they are ahead of us organizers. They're moving faster. And that was shown by the DC Fast, for instance. Next slide, please. Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to check in with this. This was this floated across my Facebook feed, I think. Caitlin Johnston. I don't know if you see her, know her or not. Yeah. Okay, absolutely. But she's talking about these two guys, managers of the empire. They're freaked out. They've lost control, and they're really worried about that. So
who's sitting on this right?
He's the CEO of Palantir, which is this big artificial intelligence defense
surveillance company. Peter Thiel, Palantir.
Yeah.
They're basically part of the Israeli and the U.S. military industrial complex.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, next slide. Okay, so the DC Fast itself was an example of this spontaneous surge. You know, we just all showed up because we saw an opportunity. We wanted to do something. It wasn't like there was some strategy meeting somewhere or another, you know, within Veterans for Peace that planned this fast. So people just showed up. Fortunately, Veterans for Peace stepped into the breach, even though there's not really an active chapter in DC. So they provided us with a place to stay. There was a lot of stuff that we really needed to have. And as fasters, you really can't do much but get back and forth and talk to people while you're there. That's enough. You need other people supporting you to do things. Okay, so I've already said there is this mass hunger for effective action. I think the next slide talks about, okay, so visitors come from everywhere around the world. We need to be able to connect those people with groups in their own hometown. We need to be able to give them lists of resources that, you know, that they can read. We need people doing publicity in DC to outreach to the press, to build the fast. We need to have people reaching out to potential fasters if we're talking about a long, long fast. This was less, five of us, more or less. We kind of came in, overlapped. Some of us were only able to fast for a few days and then had medical problems. We didn't have any medical support. That was a problem also for some of the people who came later. So there's all kinds of stuff that needs to be done. We need a local committee in DC to support this effort because I think it's going to come back. You know, I think there's a potential for building there. And I see a hand up.
Have you talked to Code Pink?
I have not spoken to them, but yes.
Totally question until we're done.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great idea. You know, I voiced these ideas when I was in D.C. because there's really not a local, active local chapter there now. There was one previously. It hasn't been picked up so far. So it is irrelevant here, but I'll keep pushing that. Okay, next slide, I think. Okay. These are some more suggestions here. So this national, it's a great site for building the movement nationally. And I think Veterans for Peace needs to focus some effort on that. I know it's a national leadership and a bunch of local chapters. So it's not, I don't know how we pull together the resources to do that, but giving that question out to you so you can solve that later. It would be great if Veterans for Peace connected with the Princeton hunger strikers because they're saying they're going to hunger strike until they get their demands met. we could connect with them, you know, to support them publicly. I think that would help them get their demands met. Okay. And here locally, I think we need to see how the folks on the panel and others of us can connect with the students here. I don't know what's going on with that. And I'm interested in doing work around Palestine. Next slide.
Last one.
Okay. Yay. So, free, free Palestine. Free, free Palestine. Free, free Palestine.
Free, free
Palestine.
Free,
free
Palestine.
Free, free Palestine. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. I just wanted a couple of things. We still got a few minutes. I wanted to thank Colleen. You know, she's a great sign maker. She also did all the sign making, or the bulk of the sign making for us while we were in Istanbul.
Buddy from the 2nd Congressional District, but if you know of anyone, tomorrow at about 12:15, we're going to set up the signs outside the CP2 convention where Angie Craig is going to be nominated. Angie Craig, who voted to send her Rashida Tlaib and voted basically for funding the genocide. And so we've got a lot of signs and only a couple of people in the CD2. So if you don't have anything to do, come see me and I'll give you the address. It's at a middle school in Eagan. So if you don't have anything to do, like 12:15 or so tomorrow. And again, it's an opportunity because a lot of these people don't know. They think of her, she's our, you know, like Amy Klobuchar, they think of her as goody two-shoes. And here she's voting for these things. So, okay.
Just I want to say, too, just people want to know what happened to the boat and to the A's. Yeah. Just so you know that the humanitarian, they went through El Arish, Egypt port. Supplies will be offloaded and go into the line of trucks with other cargo waiting to go into Gaza.
Yeah.
The ship will return to Turkey and be refilled with the same type of cargo in time to participate in the flotilla. And they've been doing this for the last 7 months. IHH has been sending aid. So you don't have to worry about the aid, but it's in line, of course.